We will start without a quorum as a subcommittee, which we are permitted to do for the purpose of public hearings, which is what we have on House Bill 3451 and 52. They're both Representative Wilkins bills. We will not open a hearing on both at the same time, though we'll take them in order and save House Bill 2803 until later. So let's open a hearing on public hearing on House Bill 3451, and Councilors will give us the overview.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 3451 involves a situation which occurs after the filing of a suit for divorce, separation, or annulment, and up until a final decree is issued, in which this bill would require the court to provide for joint custody if there are minor children involved of the parties. Joint custody, I would commend members to read the statute, which I have included, which gives a fair overview of what is involved in a joint custody situation in terms of which power and authority each parent has in regards to the children in that situation. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Representative Loken, do you want to come forward? Welcome you to our committee. This is a red letter day, Representative Williams. We have Representative Loken before the Revenue Committee and before the Judiciary Committee.
Indeed.
How about that? Well, it is a privilege to be here, and for the record, I am Representative Jane Loken from District 25, Milwaukee. And I do thank the Chair and the Committee for hearing this bill and the following bill, which has been drafted and sponsored by me and with the help of my staff. And I have also had a lot of discussion with my constituent here, Della Claire, and we have a distinct problem that certainly has been experienced not only by Mrs. Claire but by many others as they go through this situation of facing a divorce and trying to establish parenting rights and protecting the child's best interests, which doesn't always happen. And this bill is an attempt to deal with that and smooth that process out a bit. I think that we know that often in the case of a divorce, the silent victims are the children. And I know that we can't legislate all the problems out of existence. They're going to happen. But the court plays a very important role in this situation, and it's at this critical time where the decree has been filed, but and they are awaiting the resolution of the divorce. And there's kind of a gray area in there where the children are with one or the other parent, and there's not really the parenting rights have not been truly established. And that's what we are trying to extend with this bill. You will see that in section 1(2), sub 2, it speaks to after the commencement of a suit for marital annulment, dissolution, or separation, and until a decree therein, the court shall provide for the joint custody, as defined in ORS 107-169, of the minor children. And it goes on to set out situations where that would apply to one or both parents in the event that they have been convicted of a crime or in other ways have been a problem as far as their children, then, of course, that parent would not have the same rights, I suppose, under the law as the parent who has not been in such a situation. But so it is to these parenting rights that we are concerned. And although the law does speak to them in some detail, I think that we need to add this portion to really help it even further. And I know that Mrs. Claire has been very concerned about a situation in her family that they have faced, and I've asked her to come and tell about it so that it gives a more clear understanding of what parents face, and maybe one parent doesn't feel that they get the same rights under the law, and this will help give them that.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Clare. Welcome.
Chair Shetterly and members of the committee, my name is Della Clare, and I'm from Milwaukee, Oregon. From my perspective as a mother and a grandmother, I have experienced the most indescribable pain of the breakup of a family unit and how dreadfully it can affect the children when they are forced to sever the connection with one parent. I hope my comments can somehow help protect children from this pain in the future. Our son and daughter-in-law separated in May of 1995. For 6 months until the final decree, their 10-year-old daughter and 7-year-old son were forbidden to see us, the grandparents. They could not answer the telephone or let anybody, including their father, into the house. So nearly every day their father would stand at the doorstep and talk to him through the screen door, trying to calm their fears and confirm his love for them. I say to you categorically, this is no way to try and be a parent, and no way to treat the children. Finally, in December of 1995, a decree was handed down calling for the standard joint custody. Somehow, my son and daughter-in-law were able to shake hands and pledge to do what was best for the children, and they did. A sense of well-being returned to the children's lives and how desperately they needed this to happen. And they had a mutual agreement to move from their home to Wilsonville and live near each other so the children would be accessible to both parents. Once again, they could engage in soccer and baseball with their dad as coach. He and their father could once again take them skiing, and my granddaughter and I enjoyed season tickets to the ballet, so we got to enjoy that again. Such was the cooperation between my son and daughter-in-law, and many of their friends commented about them having a perfect divorce. But jealousy intervened last fall, and things fell apart. The parents found themselves back in court to argue the mom's plan to move the children to Massachusetts. This is her home, or her former home. She was here for 20 years. The court-appointed psychologist stated that both parties were equally qualified as parents. And you can imagine our reaction when 20 minutes later, the judge cleared the way for the children's removal from Oregon. Mom and the children left on Christmas Eve, 1998. In short, our family unit was held together by a slim thread of joint custody. But that thread was strong and secure and healthy. It did hold us together. Severing joint custody was and continues to be destructive. I could speak for hours about our dismay and loneliness, but the real issue here is the children. I have prepared this exhibit for you along with my testimony. This is a side-by-side contrast of the life the grandchildren enjoyed during their time in joint custody and what the removal from their hometown and father has cost them. The children's dad and we, the grandparents, greatly appreciate Representative Loken's interest in the welfare of the children as a primary concern. Please help the children of Oregon by establishing in law the presumption that every stage of marital separation, children need and have a right to both parents, a mom and a dad. And if you would like to ask any questions about this contrast in living, for instance, the children receive very good grades here, and they are receiving very good grades there. However, they feel the separation. They're having a party. They're coming home Friday, and they're having a party. And they have been relegated to lower teams there. Here they were on the upper level teams because they were good players. The dad was the coach, and they had fun playing ball. There they are, have been relegated to lower teams because of the new kids. And new kids just don't start at the top of the heap. And here the dad is our son, a nurse in ER, and he has every other week off, so he spends a lot of time with the children. So now he spends the time on the telephone, and he coaches their teams on the phone. I mean, coaches the children on the phone. The daughter wanted to know what she was doing. She's popping up all the time, and so over the phone, he said, "You stand this way, and you do this," and so he is coaching from here to there. So those are a few examples, and I thank you very, very much for listening to this bill. And I thank Jane Loken also.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Claire. Are there any questions on the committee for either Representative Loken or Ms. Claire? We have some other witnesses signed up to testify. We can see how this goes.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I think there are some amendments. There is
yes, we saw that. Do you want to speak to those?
Well, I think that you can see where the amendments are to be inserted. And I think it speaks to the area of where one or both parents have been convicted of crimes and so on, which I spoke to before, or any act that jeopardizes the health or safety of the minor children must be taken into consideration. But the thrust of the bill is to take care of those children with and continue as closely as possible a family relationship while these divorce decrees are being finalized.
Okay. Representative Willowar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One, I don't know if this is a question or whatever. What happens many times when there is a divorce is, for whatever reason it happened in the situation you talked about, one parent will move. Well, if one parent lives other than in the same vicinity, joint custody would be impossible. There would have to be a decision. Have you thought about the ramifications of that and what you might propose? Because you can't stop people from moving. You have a constitutional right to move.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bilal, that is true. You can't stop that. There again, though, if the court were to have that in under consideration, they might be able to establish some split of time for the child to be with one parent and not allow one parent to move in anger and leave the other parent totally without seeing the children. And so that is just another area that I think this bill could speak to and try to lay out some parameters for the parents.
Yes, go ahead.
So you envision that the overall philosophy would still be joint custody but with some modifications for a particular situation in a family, whether it be moving or that type of thing?
I believe so. Is that how you would see it?
That's how I understood it, yes. The joint custody from the beginning until the finalization, but something needs to occur during an interim period to prevent this, such as you don't answer the phone, don't let anybody in, and so the dad had to go to the doorway, and these children were frightened.
Follow up on the phone. This is into the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
In particular, but I'm just curious, many courts, when they're deciding custody, especially, I looked at your information, looks like your grandchildren are about 15 and 12. Is that, am I hitting the close?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Okay. Pretty exact. Okay. Because many courts, when children are that old, especially the 15-year-old, may ask the children to weigh in on their perceived needs or desires. Did that happen in your case at all, or your son's case?
Well, they were 10 and 7 at the time, and they really didn't understand.
But I mean, when she went to Massachusetts, that was just last year.
That was last fall. So then they were 14 and 10. Moved up a couple of years because the joint custody worked very well until one parent has the blessing of the court to go if they want to go. So she said, "I'm taking the children," and he tried to stop her. But by now they were 14 and 10. Now they are 11 and 15. So, yeah. So they were taken from their school. The one had started high school, taken from their school, and moved to actually it's a different culture.
Well, let me ask, just to clarify my understanding, if I may, the divorce was granted back in 95, I guess is that when December of 95 when the decree. Just a comment, and this isn't the first time that this has happened when a bill comes back that. I think this bill doesn't quite get at this situation where on line 29 and line 30 on the first page it said after commencement of the suit for annulment, dissolution, separation, and until a decree therein. So this bill seems to address temporary custody, joint custody during the pendency of a divorce proceeding and not the situation you're talking about where the decree has been, after the decree has been entered.
Well, this was the standard. It took 6 months to go to court. And so it was during that period that the children need the protection.
Okay, sir.
Mr. Chair, I believe that Mrs. Clare is also speaking to the time of the divorce, but these are other unsettling matters that came up. No, this bill does not speak to what happens 3 or 4 years after the divorce. But it is an unsettling development when, there were some issues that came up during the divorce that were not handled properly.
Okay.
May I ask a question?
Representative Lowe, sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions. Good afternoon. Was there a restraining order in the case after the divorce decree was filed or before the divorce decree was final?
Was there what?
A restraining order.
A restraining order.
Oh, no. Okay. No, there was not.
Okay. I noticed that the bill has, on page 2, line 6, that you find an exception in the event that there's a restraining order. And I don't know whether or not you're familiar with the FAPA Act, but in our county, I'm from Clackamas County as well, there are a huge number of them filed. It's fairly, it's an important remedy for people who are in danger, and I support and applaud the FAPA Act. However, I have seen cases where on occasion people will rush to the courthouse because there's been some kind of an altercation, however big or little, and get temporary custody of the child. And get the other one tossed out of the home and that kind of thing. It gives them a leg up on possession of the marital residence, but also on the children. And have you had any conversations with anybody in doing your research about how to go about doing this, about the likelihood of increasing those races to the courthouse to get that advantage under the FAPA Act? I'm deeply concerned about that aspect of this, and I'm thinking that perhaps this scheme, while very worthwhile, might make the early stages of a divorce, which are critically important to how well the divorce works in the long term over the lives of the people involved, that this would make that part of the process far more contentious than it already is. Have you thought about that?
Excuse me. Did you want to respond?
Well, I wanted to comment that you are assuming the restraining order is to prevent the father. That is a presumption. In this case, it would have been, it was the mother who was the violent one. She had the children.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Representative Lowe.
I'm back here.
I think that I'm not very familiar with this procedure, not having gone through a divorce, but nor having had to issue a restraining order, nor exercise any rights under, is it a right under FAPA?
Court has to order the release if you're asked.
But sometimes a man, I understand, a man who's been abused tends to know and states that if he seeks help from law enforcement, the courts just naturally go toward the women, toward the mother. And so he sometimes is very hesitant anyway in those situations. But I think that the court's probably very hesitant also to issue those orders. It's a difficult thing. I understand that.
Okay.
But, I don't know if there's a way that you could, you know, we're certainly open to ideas here that would make this as meaningful as possible and as helpful as possible. That's what we want, the best for the children.
Thank you. I agree that what's best for the children is certainly what we should be foremost in our minds, and as we try to fashion a way to make the whole thing, whole process of divorce work better for children, we need to think about a few things, and among them, I have done a lot of divorce work in my career and have seen cases where the joint custody might not be appropriate because the marriage breaks up because somebody has taken up with a new person, and that new person is cohabitating with them, or you know, whatever. And the, many courts try not to look at that, particularly in deciding who should be the primary parent, primary caregiving parent. They look at the relationship between the parent and the child. And unless there's some untoward behavior, or it's, you know, somebody's doing something like flagrantly in front of the children, it won't interfere for the most part with a new relationship. So I ask you, Mrs.
Claire.
Claire, I'm sorry. I ask you if your feelings about mandatory joint custody would be the same if that was the circumstance.
My opinion of the joint custody? Chair Shetterly?
Yes, now that you've conferred with counsel.
Thank you. Yes, this would have been almost a lifesaver, because, and certainly emotionally and mentally satisfactory to them, if this would have been mandatory, that this person, that one person cannot hold the children from the other, prevent the other from seeing the children. Yes, it would have been very helpful for the children, because they weren't sure what was going on.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I do have one other follow-up question, if I could. It seems to me that in the interest of providing stability for the children in the early stages of a divorce or before the process is completed, one of the issues that's most painful for you is the denial of grandparent visitation. And it's my understanding that family law does not, there is a remedy for grandparents post-decree to seek an order for grandparent visitation. Are you aware of that?
Yes, we took advantage of that. Yes.
Yes. But there may not be an order pre... I don't believe that remedy exists pre-decree. Perhaps that might be a better way to get at this without tying the court's hands in demanding joint custody. Have you thought of that?
Yes, Chair Satterley. We have thought of everything, I think. I have made phone calls to representatives and senators. We've tried to take advantage of every loophole that we could find, but not since they moved. I'm not aware that there is a grandparent right at such a distance.
Well, I'm not prepared to give you legal advice. I won't.
We'll need to
Chair Satterley, and I think what we are trying to do, again, is getting back to this bill, is to look for joint custody at this particular time until it's final and protect the children during that time.
Ms. Clark, I want to thank you for your testimony. We have another, looks like, a constituent of yours, Representative Logan.
Yes.
Cheryl Deckelman, if...
Cheryl, however... Oh, do come up. I didn't know you had a right.
We have your written testimony. Come on forward.
Chair Satterley and members of the committee, my name for the record is Cheryl Deckelman. I reside in Milwaukee, Oregon. I am the mother of two children, Luke, age 9, and Noah, who is 7 years old today. I went through a horrifying divorce within the last couple of years. My husband filed for divorce, hired an expensive attorney and a custody evaluator, and was allowed to take my children away from me for a year with absolutely no evidence to the fact that I was anything but an exemplary mother. I am also a nurse. During this year, I was allowed to see the children every other weekend. They were not allowed to call me or have any contact with their family, with my family, with their friends, with anyone except for the people my husband chose for them to be with. My husband proceeded to destroy their life as they knew it. He did not move away, but he took them out of the school where I had volunteered in the classroom and put them into a private Catholic school without my knowledge or permission. And my son Noah started school in kindergarten without me knowing even where he was or what school he was in. He basically changed their lives. And this is how their lives were when we finally went to court a year later. The judge looked at all of the evidence and realized that charges were fabricated. She handed me 55% custody to my husband's 45% custody. She stated the children must remain in the school they were attending, the Catholic school, where the principal and the teachers believed that I was the abusive person that my husband had portrayed me to be. They believe that to this day. I volunteer in that school as well, several times a week. In other words, their lives are completely different now. The right for me to choose their spirituality, to have any, to help them with their spirituality has been taken away from me. The right for me to have input in their education has been taken away from me. The principal of the school will not speak to me unless I literally follow him and hold onto his arm. The priest will not speak to me, would not take my phone calls and such. What happened to these children? Human beings don't have the right to sever this bond, and that is what was allowed to happen to these children and I. And we will never be the same. Thank you. very much for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Deckelman. Any questions for Ms. Deckelman? Testimony? Thank you. Committee and